with like old school radio audio sound effects where like, and Jesus walked along.
Maybe, probably.
What did Jesus ride a horse?
It's going to happen a lot in this version of the story.
Because that's a dog.
Animal sound effect I can do. Jesus can ride a horse and Jesus can talk to a peacock because those are the animals that I can do. Oh yeah, I do a good peacock.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would have identified that as a peacock.
Go listen to a peacock sometime.
Oh, my neighbors have peacocks.
Yeah, listen to it.
I've heard it, yeah.
Sounds like that. Yeah. Spot on. All right, it is spot on.
All right, welcome back. The Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Good afternoon here on day of recording.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Yes.
What's that from? That's from a thing.
Good morning, Vietnam.
I don't know.
That's also from a thing, but a different thing.
Yeah. Yes. At time of recording, it is Inauguration Day.
Yay.
Yes, so I know
I was
that.
I'm trying to start humming "Hail to the Chief," but I had the wrong tune in my head, and it was going to come
just
out as "Happy Birthday."
Noise
so,
again.
No, that was a
one-time deal. Covers all.
Maybe that's what they did. I didn't watch it, so I can say maybe President Joe Biden, now no longer president-elect, maybe he was making peacock noises. You know, I don't know.
Nothing would surprise me anymore.
We're so jaded.
I know. Yeah, okay.
Right.
At least he's not on Twitter.
Let me ask you, before we get into today's episode, which is not political, or at least it's not intended to be, we'll see where we go. What is your hope for this new administration? Let's start there. Since we want to acknowledge that this major event is happening, what is our hopes for the next 4 years?
Next 4 years.
That was a very weighty sigh.
Yeah, like, I'm still in this coming case. Down off of the past 4 years. I think I've seen a lot of people talking about like healing. I guess, that's as much as you can hope for, right? That all of the craziness that I think we've all felt to some extent, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you fall on, that we're able to, you know, get over some of that and meet in the middle.
I think in hindsight, President Joe Biden it was a fairly moderate Democrat, you know, especially compared to a lot of the other people running for that that nomination. So I think I'm hopeful that that can create a little bit more ground in the middle for America.
Yeah.
So I hear you on that. I think a little bit more, you know, I think this us versus them is really, really difficult, and whenever your politicians feed those flames, it's even more difficult. So I'm hopeful there as well. Pastor David, what about you?
Yeah, I think my hopes for this administration are really the same hopes that I hold for every administration, that, you know, over these 4 years, they're working for the best of as many people as possible in this country and around the world. And that's going to look different with every administration, but that's always my hope, that they are able to serve in as long as they can for as faithfully as they can.
Yeah, I think too, one of my hopes, as a left-leaning Christian and a member of a fairly progressive church and denomination, my hope is that progressive Christianity holds this administration to Christian ideals in, I would say, a better way than evangelical Christianity held the last administration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I don't want to say because Joe Biden is more in line with my politics, that he gets a free pass to do whatever he wants. And that we want to say, like, whenever injustice is made by our government, I want to stand against it and hold him to that.
Yeah. And let's be clear. I mean, Joe Biden is no more the Messiah than Donald Trump or Barack Obama or George Bush or any of the presidents of government, right? Our Messiah is not a president. Our Messiah has already come and will come again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I did see that on the day of inauguration, he went to church. And I find that is kind of a valuable thing. And I know my hope, again, is not that he rules to pass Christian policies, but rules with Christian mercy and acceptance attached to his policy. So, I think that's I'm hopeful for those things. Again, we will see what comes of these next 4 years. And I'm sure we'll talk about other things that is happening from that position at some point on the podcast.
Well, he went to a Catholic mass, so it could just be that he's a secret Vatican insurgency is coming into
here are the conspiracies.
Install the Catholicism over all the United States. Yeah.
I know
it's
that was
okay if that's his conspiracy.
I think that was.
I broke away from the Catholics once. I'll do it again.
Right. All right. Watch me.
I think that was a lot of the question marks about John F. Kennedy.
It was. Yeah.
You know,
it was the first openly Catholic president. I don't know.
Openly Catholic.
Okay. It was the first Catholic president to be.
Yeah. That, who is he getting his orders from? What did the Pope tell him to do something? Yeah. Right. So I'm not concerned about that. So.
Yeah. But it was a real question because for Catholics, there's a much, much more obedient sense of, you know, oh, the Pope is in charge. Yeah. The Pope is next to, like, you know, as Lutherans, we don't have that. Like, I don't look at Bishop Eaton and say, like, oh, yeah, Bishop Eaton's basically Jesus.
All the
like,
shots, yeah.
That's, yeah. She and I can disagree on any number of things, often in the same sentence. So,
sure. My personal feeling is that this Pope is pretty chill. So,
right. This one.
But we don't
know. There have been some loose cannons.
This is how it starts.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into our news before we get into our main story this evening.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. So, our news, let me ask you this. When it comes to selecting a password for like a internet provider or like an email, setting, you know, your Hulu, your Netflix, whatever it is,
your password? And is it, does it have caps or special?
can we do our social security numbers first?
Right,
Let me ask you, are you a kind of the same password for everything or do you mix it up for everything?
I'm mostly a same password for everything.
Yeah.
Same.
Me too.
I heard a funny story about you and a password recently.
You heard a funny story about me
and a password? That's concerning.
I have like work password and I have home password.
Yeah.
So like if I have my work email and stuff like that, I have.
And in how many of those would you say your son's birthday is correct?
Oh, yeah. And several of them, my son's birthday is wrong.
Because look, that's to trick people who are mining your data.
Exactly. They'll be like, well, I don't know what to do. Right. No, I had to come up with a brand new password. So I had one that I'd used for years, which was a variation on important dates in my own personal life.
Okay.
And it had to be changed because, you know, I'd forgotten something or something got locked out. So I had to like go through and redo all these passwords. And when I did that, I was like, oh, well, I'll start using some other information. And at the time I put in 2017 instead of 2019 for my son's birth year. So now I have a lot of passwords that have the incorrect year for my son's birthday.
Yeah. How do you remember
and
that?
And other information, because in my head, it's right. Okay. So I don't know why, but in my head, I have no problem remembering it. And then, I also know when he was born. I don't know.
All right. Well, maybe if this guy, you know, had a similar
now
mindset.
I've got to change all my passwords again.
Yeah. Thanks some of us.
He just told everybody. Yeah.
$220 million worth of Bitcoin is locked away.
So like $5?
That's really $220 million.
Oh, but worth of Bitcoin. So like a bajillion Bitcoins. Got it.
Yeah, it's a lot of Bitcoins.
No. Bitcoin, Bitcoin's like $30,000 a piece right now.
Wow.
So it's a lot of money.
Should have invested in Bitcoin. Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, it's locked away as man forgets password.
Nice.
That really sucks.
Yes. So Stefan Thomas, years ago, he's a German board programmer, so in San Francisco, did some computer work several years ago and was awarded about 7,000 Bitcoin. At the time, Bitcoin was worth about like a dollar each, and it's grown to now worth over $220 million, but he can't get into it because he forgot the password.
Yeah.
And there's like no way to like go around that, right? Like that's the whole point of Bitcoin is that there is no password recovery. There is no,
He actually has, they give you 10 attempts to guess the password and he has used 8 out of the 10 attempts. So he has 2 more left.
This would make a great game show. I would watch this.
Yeah. I'm like sweating thinking about it.
I know. Because there are times I basically use the same password every one and it constantly is telling me it's wrong. I'm like, how is that even possible? It's the same as everything else, right? And then you get your password, you go through the change process, you type in the same password you get, we're guessing, and it's like, you can't use the password you've used before. I'm like, you stupid computer.
Right.
So imagine if you were in this situation, what would your, you know, do you have a plan here of like, you have 2 guesses left, $220 million on the line.
Oh, I would 100% make somebody else do it. I don't want to be responsible for that.
I'd like hire a hacker or somebody like that. Yeah. Like, what do you think my password would be? You get 2 chances. Yeah. I'll give you $1 million if you can get my password.
You get a percentage of this.
Yeah.
That would be pretty, pretty tough to go through this. I have recently on one program, forgot my password. I went through the thing and it gave me a question to like reset it. I'm like, I don't know the answer to this question either. Yeah. So
it's always stupid. Like, what is your favorite car? What?
What was my favorite car? I don't know. I don't really have one. So
10 years ago when that's we did this.
You gotta pick the questions that only have one answer. My middle school will always be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you know, now you gotta like, I gotta call them, figure it out. But Stefan has come to terms with it.
Aw.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he never really had this money.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, I guess. All right, he says this. It was like it was actually a really big milestone in my life where, like, I sort of realized how I was going to define my self-worth going forward. I wasn't going to be about how much money I had in my bank account.
That dude's depressed. Heavily depressed. Yeah, classic you
hear that? Yes. Severe depression.
Right.
Yes, I'm hopeful, yeah, that that happens. Yes, that his inability to remember this password for $220 million. You got to come to terms with that, right? You can't just let that hang over your head the rest of your life because it's never going to happen. You're never getting that money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a shame.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Sorry, Stefan. We will, I don't know, will we pray for that? We might pray for that.
Yeah. Lift one up to God for Stefan.
Yeah, oh, so.
That's right, after he puts in the 10th password.
Right. Yeah.
All right. We are going to get to our main story, which is an article from thinkchristian.net. And it looks like that when I was perusing their website, it looks like a lot of kind of pop culture and faith intersecting is what kind of they discuss, which is great. I love those two things. And so I'm into this. And so this is all about the TV show on Disney Plus called The Mandalorian. Now, if you have not seen The Mandalorian,
this will probably have some spoilers. Yes.
It will have some spoilers, and it's also fine. You don't need to know anything about The Mandalorian going into this. Sure. That we'll cover a few things, but that's not really what is the takeaway. It's not like an analysis of the show. It's kind of using the show for a broader
side gig. Views. We should do that. That should be another podcast that will come out. Yeah.
Yes.
Beyond Sunday, Disney Plus Critique Edition.
Yeah, so, I would love that.
in December, The Mandalorian wrapped up season two. Have y'all watched Mandalorian season one and season two?
I have.
Well, I watched all of season one and most of season two so far. Okay. I haven't finished.
Yes, in December, I caught up both season one and season two. So I watched all of it all at once, kind of a thing. You know, every night I'd watch one or two episodes till I was done. So I do enjoy it. So if you're unfamiliar completely, The Mandalorian is a TV show set in the Star Wars universe about a Mandalorian. And if you're like, that just sounds like a nonsense word, it is. It's made up for the show. And so if you are familiar,
made up for the Star Wars universe. It's
Yes. If you are familiar with Star Wars, the original trilogy that came out in the 70s and 80s, the bounty hunter Boba Fett is a Mandalorian. So, and it's not a race, it's kind of a religion. And so they are all Mandalorians. And so this is one of these characters who starts off the show as a bounty hunter, and through chance encounter, rescues this child that he was called to bring in, who's a baby Yoda. And he
bonds. The most adorable Star Wars creature.
Honestly, yeah.
It's really cute.
It put the Ewoks to shame. Yeah. Right? I mean, the Ewoks held the title for generations. But,
did they?
As the cutest Star Wars creature.
Teddy bears. I thought there was some controversy about the Ewok. I thought that some people were like Ewok haters.
I'm a little
bit. If you're an Ewok hater, go ahead and get out of here. Yeah. They're adorable. They're furry. No, well, don't do that. Yeah, you could just cuddle an Ewok all day long.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board.
It's really cute. If you've never seen Star Wars or have no interest, if you Google Baby Yoda, you'd be like, that's pretty cute.
You've probably seen it. Even if you have zero interest in Star Wars, you've probably seen Baby Yoda.
My grandmother knows Baby Yoda. See, there you go. She's not a Elisa's Star Wars grandma fan.
Knows Baby Yoda. So you know Baby Yoda.
Yes.
And so the show kind of centers around the Mandalorian. And that's just really what he's called, or usually Mando. He has a name in the show. Let's see, I'll look it up real quick. It's Din Djarin, or Mando, and his journey with this baby Yoda trying to get it back to kind of like its people. So
The child.
The child is what it's called,
Because we don't know its name
until later on.
So why this article is discussed in the show, not just from a Star Wars perspective, is that the Mandalorians as a religion have a code. And the Mandalorian, Mando, has is a strict adherent to the code. And one of the main central themes is he cannot take off his helmet in front of other people. Mm-hmm. So he wears a helmet the entire show, cannot take it off in front of others. And that's his, he in the Mandalorian world would be a fundamentalist because he is a strict adherent there. And you meet mm-hmm. other people, other Mandalorians who do take off their helmets. And they even call him a religious zealot, you know, kind mm-hmm. of a thing. So, but there's a period late in season two where he's faced with a decision. He has to get this information. It means he has to take off his helmet to save the child, Baby mm-hmm. Yoda. And so he's faced with this thing, like, what does my religion call me to do? To break this oath of never taking off this helmet or my commitment to saving this child that I'm caring for.
Which he was also instructed to that commitment by his kind of little leader of his religious order.
Right. Yes.
It isn't just like he's like, oh, I want to save this child. It's like, no, his religious leader said, this is your job. You now have to do this. And once he takes on a charge, he has to complete that mission is kind of what they would call it there. Yeah.
Yeah. So these two fundamental parts of himself have mm-hmm. clashed, and he has to say, what do I do? Right. Like these two major issues, they're clashing. Fundamentalism of my helmet versus my charge to care for the child, which one wins? Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, he takes the helmet off. All right. Yes.
He did say spoiler alert first, folks. All right. So you had warning.
Yes. And it really isn't that big of a spoiler. I mean, out of all the things to spoil from Mandalorian and Star Wars universe, this
is taking his helmet off.
Yeah. This is relatively small.
The real surprising part is when the Guardians of the Galaxy show up. And
sure, yeah.
No one saw that coming.
The Avengers. What?
Yes. And so I think that this is a really interesting part, right? Like, so what happens? And the question that I think this article is raising that we can kind of connect to is, what happens for us when two fundamental parts of our faith clash? Mm-hmm. What do we do? How do we reconcile these two things? So let's start there. So what is a situation, do you think, where two fundamental parts of the Christian faith could clash?
Two fundamental parts of it. Like in modern context, what's the situation? Is that the
you could do modern, you could do a biblical context. Because I've got some Bible illustrations here that we can go through in a second.
Okay. Somebody's prepared.
Well, I mean, whenever I hear this kind of story, the first place that I always go is to the story of the Good Samaritan. Because ultimately that's a story about law conflicting with love of neighbor. Because the priest and the Levite, you know, who, if you remember the story, right, the man's beaten on the side of the road, left for dead, and three people pass him. There's priest, the Levite, and then Samaritan. So the priest and Levite come by, and they both were upholding parts of the religious law by not touching blood, by not touching something that's dead or maybe dead, right, by keeping their, those were all things that allowed them to maintain cleanliness and stay part of the community from that sense of being clean. And then the Samaritan came along who was, you know, the outsider, and the Samaritan was the one who was willing to cast aside those particular cultural norms and say, no, caring for this person is more mm-hmm. important than anything else. And Jesus then kind of instructs this lawyer who's asked this question to go and do likewise, that caring for your neighbor is more important than upholding this religious purity. Because for the Jewish people, especially in Jesus's day, that religious cleanliness was really important, and becoming unclean wasn't necessarily seen as sinful, but it was upheld as the highest standard, right? Mm. So from the Torah's perspective, there are natural things that happen in life that make you unclean. You get sick, you're unclean. You are a woman and you give birth, you're unclean, right? Those are not sinful, but you have to be made clean again. And so they were valuing maintaining their purity at all cost mm-hmm. versus loving their neighbor, where Jesus is really saying, like, look, being unclean is not the end of the world. Loving your neighbor is what it's supposed to be all about.
Yeah, I think that's a good example.
I appreciate
for modern times. I think one of the commands and desires of the Christian life is to gather frequently in worship with mm-hmm. communion attached to that. And then we also have a pandemic that we're working with. So what does it mean to love my neighbor so I do not spread coronavirus and gather frequently in worship and celebrate communion together? These are two things that, you know, that especially early on as we're figuring things out, that we'd say, I don't know how to do both. I don't know how to handle doing both. And some people lands on, well, you should just go to church no matter what. And some people land on, well, we'll do online church and we'll love our neighbor that's the priority. And so I think we see that, that tension between those two belief systems.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, that are at play, and which one is more valuable at that moment. Mm-hmm. And not to say, mm-hmm, I think people that chose to go to worship last March, the church's history to open, did not think loving their neighbor was important. And people that shut down and are doing more online church don't think worship is important. It's just this conflict, and we're just, yeah, figuring out what those two things look like. And sometimes we would say the conflict resolves itself with this thing, like maybe that thing I held on to wasn't really that important. So in your, mm-hmm, right, example, Pastor David, the not wanting to touch blood or with, mm-hmm, buddy, maybe it's really not that important,
right,
in hindsight. But for this, these are two very important parts of the Christian faith, you know, yeah, like, so how to reconcile those two things is difficult. Mm-hmm. Any other things we can example or point to of like this clash between two ideologies that we share at the same time?
Yeah, well, I was actually just thinking, we have behind us on the wall the verse, seek justice, love mercy, and walk humbly. I think it finishes with your God, but that was left, mm-hmm, out, right?
Well, because it's, you know, three panels, and it, you know, the two,
right,
words,
right, there was not space, so we left
symmetrical
out
God. The rules of three, yeah, do dictate you should only have the, sure, three panels. All right. Four panels,
listen,
is not,
I didn't,
space,
design it, all right?
It's, they're beautiful for, yeah, anybody that might be listening that picked them out. I, right, love them. But justice and mercy are conflicting,
mm,
concepts in and of themselves. And it makes me think of the conversation surrounding prison reform right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are called to seek justice. We're also called to love mercy. And how does that feed into a justice system that we have today, where you're dealing with not only perpetrators and criminals, but also victims and their families and those, mm-hmm, that are left behind? How do those two things interact, and how, mm-hmm, should they interact for a Christian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we see this, we're going to see this often, you know, again, biblical mandates to love and care for foreigners and aliens alongside biblical mandates to respect and honor the laws of the land. And we, yeah, see this kind of play out, like, what does that mean with our southern border in the United, mm-hmm, States? How do we hold those two things together all at once? And sometimes, usually it's devolved into like an extremes on either side of, mm-hmm, either you want a wall built or you're for open borders and nobody can come in whenever they want. And reality, maybe those two extremes are not really what, how to, mm-hmm, hold those two, mm-hmm, things in, right, tension really, really are. And so I think that these things are true for Christianity. And I think we're going to see these, especially the harder and longer we hold to kind of quote unquote the rules of Christianity, it's, mm-hmm, it's more and more likely we'll see tension between those rules. And I'm not advocating for not holding on to the rules of Christianity, but I do think that we can acknowledge at strong adherence we'll find tension more so than if you're just playing a little fast and loose with the things, you know. And that's not necessarily good or bad, you know. So
yeah.
All right. So what does this mean here? You know, we see this in the Mandalorians. Well, how do you and I reconcile when those two ideologies within us clash? How do you know which one to go with?
Yeah. So I think in the article that we're talking about, I think the language he uses is righteousness versus mercy. Mm-hmm. The righteousness is leaving the helmet on and mercy is taking the helmet off, yep, essentially. And I think mercy, I like the use of mercy here. Righteousness, I wrestle with whether or not that's the word that I would use to describe that pattern. But I think mercy is helpful because I think mercy is at the heart of Jesus's ministry. Mm-hmm. At every turn, right, there are points where Jesus is confronted by people that he doesn't want to help and he chooses mercy. And there are people who are outside of the Jewish faith and he chooses mercy. And there are people who are the ones who are assaulting him and he chooses mercy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so if we're trying to live a life in line with the life that Jesus demonstrated for us, it seems like mercy should always be the choice that we choose. And so, you know, you think about the worship versus loving your neighbor conversation that you were bringing up, right, Patrick? I mean, for me, mercy is sacrificing things that I would like. I would like to be in worship doing things the way that I've always done them, but sacrificing something that I like in order to care for and love my neighbor, right? That is an element of, right, mercy. And so for me, that makes that an easier choice to say that we're not going to worship in person in the same way because we're going to be loving and caring for our neighbor. Mercy is always where I start. It's not perfect, but that's, I think, for me, helpful language to try to get around that. not around it, into it, into the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing as I was reading this article is how often, you know, when we say, when we come up against something, we say, okay, you know, I have a choice here and I just want to do the right thing. Like, how often do we default to the rule being the right thing mm-hmm. over the merciful choice? I think it's more frequently than I would like to think that we do, because it's, I think it's a comfort zone thing. We have something to point to, you know, say, okay, well, the Bible says this, so I'm uncomfortable. I have a choice here, so I'm going to go with this thing. And we forget that that mercy is at the core of, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. scripture.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And when you're talking, like, I'm hearing you say this and I'm thinking about our kids, right? That mm-hmm. you're that, like, how I probably don't do this very well myself, but how often am I choosing mercy over the rule with my right. own child?
Right.
And, you know, there are certainly points like, you know, if I walk downstairs and Sophia's coloring on a wall, right? Sure. Mercy is probably not going to be my first reaction in right. that moment, because there are rules and right. and the rules are there for a reason. And so mercy cannot be the only response.
Right.
But I do think there's also mercy in upholding the rules mm-hmm. in an appropriate way, right? I mean, I think justice and mercy can be held together.
Yeah.
That there can be consequences and there can be mercy that goes along with that. And I think that's a tension that we don't always want to hold, because I think we feel like if we try to hold mercy and justice together, we're going to be ripped in half.
Right.
But I think that what scripture and Jesus is trying to demonstrate us is that mercy and justice can be held in tension. You just really have to work at it, right? This isn't an easy journey to be on.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, like, at least you kind of mentioned our justice system really exemplifies justice versus mercy, both that can be a play in these things. And whenever we go to extremes on one side or the other, we end up really failing all parties in general. So I read a story, you know, recently of a man who stole a backpack and has been in jail for 30 years. And like, you have to look at that and you're like, that's such an extreme penalty. And this is based on, you know, strike systems mm-hmm. and other things, you know, built into the system that were meant to perform greater levels of justice, but they ended up with an unjust system, but it's right. how justice is supposed to work. And I'm using justice in quotes. But, you know, somebody coming in convicted of, you know, child abuse, murder, you know, other violent crimes, and mercy just being overflowed without any sense of justice attached to them mm-hmm. in our court system, that doesn't actually help us as a society move forward or help victims in society necessarily move forward. So both those things have to be present in our justice system to figure out how can we best create, you know, a functional group of people, a functional community. And in faith, both those things are necessary. But oftentimes we find ourselves drawn to extremes, like the Mandalorian, mm-hmm. right? Like to these one thing, it's either one or the other. And how do we mix and blend both constantly is hard, because that requires nuance, thinking, and empathy. And following a list of rules is much easier, or saying the rules don't really matter at all is also much easier. You know, those things are just very, very easy paths. And following a blend of both is much harder.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, why it's why oftentimes we're not really drawn to following that blended path.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as people, we love frameworks, right? We love rules. We love frameworks. We love things that we can reference and point to as patterns. But so the extremes are always going to be the easy choice, right? Because those have frameworks that you can point to and rules and rationality that you can back up. But I think whenever you try to find a middle ground or a gray area, that's a much more difficult thing to navigate, because you're doing that without a framework.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's a part of the beauty of Lutheran faith, right? Is that we kind of have built our foundation on this both and concept, that mm-hmm. we have to live in that gray area. We can't be on one side or the other. We have to be trying to hold these things in tension, because we are in a world and we're not of this world, right? We're already forgiven and we're still sinners. We're already redeemed and we're still living in this broken place. Yeah. And so we have to live in that gray space. And yeah, so I mean, if we're looking at like just a week-to-week practice of how do we do this, I mean, I think most of the people who come into Word of Life on a given Sunday would not line up with the Mandalorian's take, right? They, most people here would not say, oh yeah, we have to wear our helmet everywhere we go with whatever that, but we do have our own elements of that, right? We do have our own thing of, well, this is the right way, you know, how many times have I heard, well, this is the right way to sing this hymn,
yeah,
or this is the right way to say the Apostles' Creed, or the right way to say the Lord's Prayer, or the right way to celebrate communion together, right? We all have those little things that we do. I have these things that we do because it's what I'm familiar with and what I'm comfortable with. And when we get trapped into that, we get into this cycle of it just being about what makes me comfortable.
Yeah.
And if anything, church and faith should be regularly making us uncomfortable. We should be far more uncomfortable encountering Jesus on a regular basis than we are anything else. Because I guarantee you, as the disciples were following Jesus around, everything he was saying was uncomfortable to them because it was challenging everything they knew and thought they understood about the world.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this from Luke chapter 14, speaking of Jesus making his people uncomfortable. And I think that this is kind of a good framework of how Jesus
sit in this beanbag chair and you'll never be comfortable again.
How Jesus really literally deals with this situation of two conflicting things at present at once. So this is Luke 14 starting in verse one. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisee and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. And I think this is powerful because if you're unfamiliar with Sabbath era laws around, you know, Jesus' time, they're strong. That they took the idea of rest on the Sabbath to an extreme, probably to the point where it's no longer really actually all that restful, you know, like because they refuse to do work that even in culturally today, like turning on the oven, a light switch would be considered work, you know, so like we can't do those things on the Sabbath. And so for them, they're like, well, healing is an act of work. So it's wrong that Jesus would do that on the Sabbath. It's supposed to be a day of rest. And Jesus reminds them that when rules of the Sabbath and compassion to someone else, especially someone oppressed, come into conflict with one another, compassion should win. And Jesus does not say, and guess what, guys? Rules around the Sabbath are dumb and nobody should follow them ever. Like he does not say that. He just is really illustrating when the rules and compassion come into conflict, let's choose compassion. Like, and that is challenging. And I think we even see them like, yeah, I do that, but it's not okay for you to do that. It's kind of what the Pharisees would be thinking about Jesus.
And you know, and elsewhere, Jesus actually says, you know, the Sabbath is not made for man, but man for the humanity for the Sabbath. And then Jesus goes on to say, like, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. Like, you know, the Sabbath is here to give us this gift, right? And then we turn that gift into a law. And we say, oh, well, now if we, you know, do this wrong, God's going to be angry at us. When God's like, no, this is a gift that I'm giving you, because all these other cultures around you just work 7 days a week. And I'm saying, no, you need to rest. I'm giving you this gift.
Yeah.
And so Jesus, I think, is again saying, like, this was for you.
We can't have nice things.
Right, this was a gift and you've completely messed it up. You've made it about something else. And we do the same thing all the time. Right. I mean, we put up boundaries around communion, this thing that was supposed to be a gift to us. And we're like, no, you got to do it this way. Or we put up boundaries around, I don't know, church membership or prayer or who can preach or who can teach. Like we put up all this stuff saying we know the right way as if all these things are not the gift that they truly are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've talked about my trauma surrounding communion before. Maybe not on the podcast.
Ooh, I don't know.
So growing up, I was Presbyterian, and the phrasing there was, "You eat and drink judgment on yourself."
Yikes!
So it became this terrifying thing.
Yeah, that is.
As a kid, I'm mostly over it now. Good. Happy to report.
You actually eat and drink the love and grace of God.
Sure,
Because God has judged you and seen you as righteous because of Jesus' death and resurrection.
Yeah, I mean, there are churches out there that take those things, and you know, speaking of communion, very, very seriously. Before I came to work at Life, I worked at a much more conservative church, and the first time I was there, nobody really knew who I was, and I just came on a Sunday before I started working there. and I went up for communion and I did not get served communion. Like, yeah. So, because they didn't know me, who's this guy, you know, like coming up here. So
you can't have communion because they don't know who you are.
Yeah. Some churches will 100% follow those ideals. Yeah.
There are some churches who will not commune if you're like, if they don't know you. There are others who will say, like, even if you're a member of another church that we know, if you're not a member of this church, we will not commune you.
Okay.
I mean, people get real strict about this stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy town. No, I'm sorry. It's not crazy town. It's different.
Sure.
I feel like the honest reaction was the first one.
I should be showing some more mercy towards towards my brothers.
Sister and brothers in crazy town.
These pastors that would follow this adherence do think it is an act of mercy. Like they think, maybe based on what Elise said, like that is a reality and they're trying to save and protect their flock. I don't want to say like it's just this mean-spirited or
it's not
exclusive. Yeah. They believe that this is the act of mercy, but I think it does come into this conflict, right? Like there's something precious, there's something valuable, there's something important in front of us and mystical, and we have people that may not take it as seriously as we would want, or they don't have as strong or even a faith in Jesus when they come up there. What do we do? And so it's these two conflicting ideas of saying, like, communion is incredibly serious. So for the Lutheran Church, it's the highlight of the service. It is what is the most important aspect that we're going to do on Sunday morning is take communion together.
Yeah. Right after the welcome and announcements. That's the most important part. Once we get the church picnic
sharing
in there.
The peace.
Right. Once we do a Kyrie, then we're right there. Yes. then what do we do when some people don't take it very seriously, or they don't see it as the highlight of the church?
Yeah.
These two conflicting things at work. How do we operate? Mm. And go ahead.
I think we get at least says something too. Maybe we're going to say the same thing.
Probably are. But I wanted to say it first.
if you've ever had like your loved one or someone that you care about, and you're like showing them this movie that you love, and they don't love it in the right way, right? Like you're like, you know, come watch The Mandalorian with me. This thing is incredible, and they're like, I don't get it. Why is it like? It's kind of like that. Like people coming to Jesus and like, I don't really get it. I don't know. And so for someone who it's very powerful for, they're like, well, then you don't get to watch The Mandalorian anymore. And
Mandalorian is just for me,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, I always kind of wonder at our tendency to police that kind of stuff for other people. Mm-hmm. That bothers me, that is what we default to, that I'm worried that you're not going to take this as seriously as I think maybe you should, and so you cannot participate. I need to be the gatekeeper for this.
Yeah, there's a great theologian, I think von Balthasar was the name. I'll have to look that up at some point. But
bless his heart.
Yeah, there's a part of a book that he wrote called Hell is for Other People.
Oh.
And the whole concept of this particular chapter is that whenever people talk about hell, they're never the ones in it, right? Yeah. Like whatever the line is that other people are going to hell,
right,
they're always just on the right side of it. Yeah, hell is always about other people.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we're going to see this, you know, played out. So the question now, you know, as we kind of wrapping things up, how do we make sure we're choosing compassion?
Hmm. I feel like this is a bad time for us to have like a long silence.
What's that?
I mean, I think there is an element of discomfort that if you're, this is going to sound weird, and maybe this isn't fully fleshed out, but I think if the choice makes you slightly uncomfortable, there's a decent chance that it's leaning into compassion in some way or another, because I think compassion will also often make us uncomfortable, because following, for most of us, following rules comes pretty comfortably.
Yeah.
Knowing this is right, this is wrong comes pretty comfortably. So leaning into that can be a place to start. I think too, I mean, well, maybe the golden rule is a place to start, right? I mean, if you put yourself in the position of the person that you're acting with, how would you want to be treated, right? If you were fleeing your homeland where you feared for your life, and you showed up at a border with your child, and you didn't know where to go, and you didn't speak the language, how would you want someone to treat you in that moment?
Yeah.
You know, if you were someone who was at high risk of this current pandemic and you wanted to be able to worship, how would you want to be treated? How would you want to be gathering with your community? Yeah. I think putting yourself in those shoes, because our psychological tendency is to do the opposite, is to always assume the best about ourselves and the worst about others, yeah. Right? And I mean, they've done studies on this, and this is just how we approach the world. That is our baseline, is that mm-hmm. I always get the benefit of the doubt and you don't. And right. I think we need to flip that script. Yeah. I think that's a good, compassionate place to yeah. start.
I think, you know, for me, I always try to remind myself that as a Christian, we find our identity in the tension mm-hmm. between two ideas, right? Like, that is where Christianity lives. So whenever, like you said, this, like, leaning into that discomfort, I think is really important, and to just to know that there is some comfort in that discomfort, because mm-hmm, there's supposed mm-hmm. to be cognitive dissonance. There's supposed to be tension. That's where your faith lives.
Mm-hmm. I like that. There's comfort in the discomfort. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that on three little panels yeah. on our wall, comfort in the discomfort.
Smaller ones under the thing. Right. Yeah. With your God.
Yeah, I think that place of empathy is going to be so valuable, of like, how can I make sure that I am being empathetic towards the people that I'm serving and caring for. But we can also acknowledge that there are times where it's like both the choices feel compassionate, and yet one thing may feel to someone else less compassionate than the other. So I'm holding these two kind of things in tension, of like, I am trying to serve two parties or two groups, whether that's, okay, I have a, you know, speaking of extremes here, an immigrant family wanting to come in, and I want to show compassion there. And yet they're coming into our village or to our town will create a greater economic strain on people who already feel that they have a great economic strain. And so how can we show compassion to both groups is really, really difficult, right? Like, we don't want to just say like, well, compassion for the immigrant family is just precedence over the community. And we don't want to say that compassion of the community is precedence over the immigrant family. In every situation, there has to be this tension, right? Like, and we can acknowledge, when we talked about at the beginning of the podcast here, a striving for unity as a nation, that means in those graphs of unity, sometimes someone might feel left out of that unity. Like, sometimes that means someone might face hurt. Like, it's, we cannot create a system that is always good for everyone. And that's difficult.
I agree that we can't create a system that's always good for everyone. But I also think that we can be more intentional about creating spaces that allow for mercy for every person, and whether or not people choose to enter into that is ultimately still up to them, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think a lot of this comes down to kind of our American ideals of individualism versus a view of the collective, and being willing to see others as our, not just our companions, but as our fellow siblings in Christ, right? Fellow mm-hmm. Creations of God who are beloved children. But, you know, did we talk about this on the podcast, or was this just another conversation that I was having where, like, you tried to create a welcoming space, mm-hmm. and in creating a welcoming space, someone is going to feel like you're not welcoming them, right. because you're welcoming everyone. Sure. Someone's going to feel like, oh, well, I'm not welcome there anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah. Sorry to interrupt here.
No, it's okay. I think it's the same idea that you can yeah. create a merciful space, and in creating a merciful space for more people, someone's going to feel like that's no longer right. merciful for sure. them.
That's self-removing, though, at yeah. that point. Yeah. You know,
Let's talk about, like, there are places where the rubber does meet the road. How could you be welcoming and merciful to an abusive spouse while protecting injustice for the abused spouse? Both those right. things are really, really difficult and high tension. And we can say there's not a perfect answer. Like, I'm willing to say, like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to say there's grace and mercy for those that are abusers while I protect those that are abused. Yeah. And I think that this is, you know, thankfully a bigger issue than just us three on this podcast have to worry yeah. about or wrestle with. And Jesus is there, but, like, how do we do mercy to both parties in that situation can be very complex. And that doesn't mean there's no judgment there, but, you know, go to prison, come out of prison. How do we serve communion to both? You know, that's really difficult. That's a really, really complex situation. And by diminishing the complexity, I think that diminishes the value of both parties. And we want to continue to say, like, there's tension, and I don't know the right answer.
Well, I do, but I'm not going to say it.
Right. So, tune in next. next week for the right answer.
Because I agree. Like in the situation of like, should I keep my helmet on or should I save the baby?
You save everybody's the baby. On board. Yeah.
Yeah. But should we be merciful to an abuser or should we hold injustice for the sake of the abused? Wow, that's harder, right? Like that's a much harder situation, like to, because it's both paths could be really, really good and valuable. And there could be redemption on both paths. And I don't really know the answer. And that makes it much more difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we go back to the Mando for a second, I'm curious, you know, if there's like the backstory to the Mando, how many other situations had he faced where something would have been easier had he just taken off his mask?
Yeah.
You know, how many times did he made the choice, no, I'm not going to take off my mask, and still been okay, still gotten through his mission, still accomplished what he needed to, even though something could have been easier, simpler, safer if he had just been willing to take off the mask. And but something in him, I mean, that's kind of the character development that you see throughout the series, right? Something in him is softening and seeing that there's something more than this. And I think that's a piece of the journey for all of us, that there are these lines that all of us draw. And part of the work of Jesus is softening those lines and saying, look, my mercy, my grace is bigger than this.
Yeah. Spoilers for Mandalorian season one. At the end of that season, he is critically wounded and dying, and a droid wants to scan him to heal him, but will have to remove the mask. And he says, no, he would rather die than take off the mask. And eventually through some back and forth between him and the droid, he says, okay, well, the droid doesn't really count if I take my mask off.
Right.
Like, because it's not a living person, so I can take my mask off in front of this droid. But you know, we see that in this, even in this one series, this adherence of like, this means so much to me, I'd rather die than take it off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but to save another, I'm willing to give it up.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible story of growth, and we can see that here in faith. There are things that matter so much to me that I would rather die than let go of, but for the sake of the other, I'm willing to let go of. It's really powerful and really incredible storytelling.
Yeah, this is going to go down a little rabbit hole, so I don't want to go too far, but I feel like this takes us back to the worship conversation around pandemic, right? That how many of us were making this choice out of, well, I'm willing to die so that I can continue to worship the way that, like, how many times did we hear, well, I'm not afraid of the coronavirus. You know, I'm not afraid to, like, yeah, I'm not afraid to die either. Like, I'm not in worship because I'm afraid to die. I'm confident that when and if I die, when I die, never know. I don't know.
Jesus could come back tomorrow. We don't know.
Right.
I'm working on my backup plan.
I'm confident that I'm going to be okay. I'm confident that my family is going to be okay when I die. That does not change my love for neighbor. And so, and that's the distinction that the Mandalorian makes. And maybe that's a distinction that not all of us are making the same way of where am I willing to risk my own life versus where am I willing to protect the lives of others?
Yeah. All right, I think that does give us, a good conversation. I think we had a good time to discuss these things and also acknowledge there's real tension between the rules and understanding and mercy, and especially when mercy versus mercy is really, really tense.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't absolve us from wanting to step into those places as Christians and explore how can we be the most empathetic, the most tender, the most loving to every person that we meet. And it can be really, really hard. And really, really difficult. And we can acknowledge those things. And I hope that 2021 is a greater level for all of us as a faith community, whether you're part of our church or part of our podcast listening team, of wanting to enter in those tension spaces more, of saying, how can I let go of things that seem very, very important to me for the sake of loving my neighbor? And that can be difficult and really valuable. Yeah, thank you. I thank you both for this conversation. I really feel like I'm learning a lot by being a part of this podcast. I'm excited.
You feel like you're learning a lot too.
That's you've come a long way.
Wow.
Patrick's made great strides in this week's episode.
I'm the only one here who doesn't have some type of degree in religion.
And yet, Patrick is the one making great strides. You have a degree in like outdoor ministry.
Yeah. Well, that's a minor.
Just a minor.
That's still a degree. So I mean, all right. That's all I've got. Anybody else?
No, I'm good. So hey, if you like what you heard today or on any of our episodes, be sure to share this out and look at those people who are wrestling with these questions of, do I need to be keeping my mask on or off? Wait, no, don't talk to those people. Keep the mask on. Keep the mask on.
This is the way.
Keep the mask on. But share this podcast out with your friends, family, wherever they are, and so they can enjoy the dulcet tones of Beyond Sunday Podcast as well. At beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Send us all of your thoughts and your stories and passwords and social security numbers, all those things too. We'll take all of it.
Cult.
Oops. Back up. All right. Not that far. Yeah, sorry. Ooh. Rewind.
Yes. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.